Hello, it's Andy here, your host on this here podcast. Well, here we are, episode 3, and a little confession before we go ahead with this. I've just spent a couple of hours going through the edit and taken out a whole bunch of me going, well, that's interesting, okay, because I was just fanboying too much with Gervier, and he was giving so much. And it just goes to show how difficult this podcasting business is, because I was so engaged, I wasn't thinking about the recording. I was just going, yep, I enjoy it, I'm enjoying everything you're saying, thank you very much, and to the detriment of the pod itself. So it's all been taken out, and there's a free prize for anybody who spots the glitches. There isn't really, but hey. So episode 3, Gervier Johal, world-class photographer. Properly a world-class photographer, and one of the few people that's ever taken a good picture of me, has to be said. Very lucky to get Gervier at the last minute. He came down to the Make It Real podcast studio and gave me about 45 minutes of his time, which isn't to be sniffed at. I'm really, really pleased that he did. So thanks, Gervier, if you're listening. So, if you'd like to take part too, you're an industry professional and you want to come on, then I'd be pleased to hear from you. Contact me, Facebook, Instagram, or email andy@jibztv.com, jibztv.com. Look forward to hearing from you. Thanks to those that have been in touch already. I'm really, really pleased with the support I'm being shown and the number of people that want to take part. It's really refreshing. I'm really, really pleased, so thank you. Anyway, let's crack on. Enough of me waffling. This is episode 3 of the Wedding Professionals podcast, and it's Mr. Gervier Johal. So here we are, episode 3, and it's the multi-award winning photographer. That's true, isn't it?
Yes.
Mr. Gervier Johal. How you doing, man?
I'm good, thank you, Andy. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Thank you for agreeing to do this in the last 12 minutes. It's brilliant to have you on, and I've got to confess, you were definitely a must-do interview for me, because looking at your work, I'm always knocked out by the imagery that you create. That kind of leads me into the first question, which is, how do you go about creating something unique for your customers each and every time? Because looking at what you do, it's all fairly unique, and I don't know how you do it. I'm not asking for trade secrets, by the way.
No, but I'll give everything away if you want to. I think it all starts from client consultations, client meetings, what their expectations are and what they would like to achieve from the wedding day. The reality is my website and my portfolio, I say about 95% of it is portraits, stylized images. But the reality on the wedding day is 90% of it is actually pure documentary, it's part of journalism. So the part of the day in the wedding that I can actually control is 5%, if at best it's going to be 10%. So those are the parts of the day that I can control are the parts of the day that the bride and groom want me to control. So that's kind of pushed on my portfolio, pushed on my website and social media. And so that's why bride and grooms book me. But they're booking me for the fact that they want to see something different that they haven't seen before. And I think that's where the creativity comes in, where it's just like you're having a conversation with your client to make sure there's enough time in the day, an itinerary, what they want to achieve. And then it's just, my goal is always to create something extraordinary given an ordinary location. So sometimes, we have these fancy locations, like we've been to Morocco, we've been around the world, we've had some fantastic weddings. Yeah. But then some of my favourite weddings have been back garden weddings or low budget weddings. Okay. Because now it puts me in a position where I have to open up the creativity to create something different as a visual narrative from the scene that I'm actually given. So I push the boundaries as much as possible of what I want to create. And I think first, one of the things that have helped me achieve that is, these competitions and these awards. So an image that I probably won first place, 7-8 years ago, if I was to enter that into a competition now, it wouldn't be scored in the top 5. Times are changing, photographers are changing, AI is coming in and everything else, and technology and camera equipment and everything's changing, whereby photographers are pushing the boundaries. So it's just like, what do you do to keep pushing the boundaries, keep being a step ahead? I'd rather, carve my own path as opposed to follow somebody else's.
So what do you think has caused that sea change in the business where an image that you produced 5 years ago that you would have been uber proud of now wouldn't place?
It won't, necessarily won't place in the top five in a competition or award ceremony, but it's still something that I'm still proud of.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It's something that I, you know, it's a milestone or something that I achieved in that time or trying to create something different. So it's still something different and unique for myself. And then I've seen other photographers who try and, dare I say, copycat. And it's always nice to know that you've kind of set the precedence for the photographers to follow, as opposed to you trying to keep up with the trends, trying to keep up and catch up with everybody. I'd rather forge my own path.
And how do you deal with those copycat images that might just try and emulate what you're doing? Do you just sort of go, do you just feel an element of pride that, that somebody is actually taking the time to follow you that closely and replicate what you do?
Yes and no. I mean, I think ask me that question 8 years ago, I'd probably give you a bit of an answer which with a lot of bleeps.
Okay, right.
You know, I wasn't really impressed when photographers do that. But then, you know, what's the expression? Imitation is a form of flattery. Okay. So that's where I'm at now. But then at the same time, sometimes I'm kind of stuck in a catch-22 scenario where I do teach, I do run workshops, and I educate and mentor photographers throughout the world. But what I try and do is I try and teach them my methods of lighting, posing, and shooting and editing. Yeah. But I kind of do it in a way where I want you guys to go off and create your own, as opposed to be, dare I say, having little Gervies running around copying me.
Yeah.
But so when I teach and I mentor photographers, I want to see them achieve, and I want to see them win, and I want to see them succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But then what does sometimes grate me is when you got somebody who just literally copies exactly everything that you've done. And then sometimes at a point I feel, I don't think failure is the right word, but sometimes a sense of failure that, hold on, I've taught you, I've mentored you, but you haven't done anything with it. You've just come back and copied me. So in that perspective, I kind of feel as if I failed the student, but it's one of those.
That's interesting. Okay, so how much does the social media aspect assist other people in copying you? If do you know what I mean? If you're putting images out on socials and other people are seeing that, would you rather there was no social media so you could just be yourself and not worry about the copycats?
I would to a certain degree, but at the same time, it's just like if I'm not releasing the images and they're only on my website, whether they're on, if they're not on social media and they're just on my website, you'd still have photographers copying the same thing. So the only way for clients to see your work and see the fact that you're pushing boundaries and doing something different, each year I try and top myself up, not top, like kind of beat myself from the image. Last year, I think a couple of years ago, I had an image which I thought was the best image that I created that year and so far in my career up to date. It was a picture of a bride and groom on a chessboard, dressed as a king and queen on a chessboard.
Wow.
And it was, you know, the groom ended up extending his screens at the reception for this image.
Wow.
And then that image got me a lot of work because a lot of clients wanted conceptual work and they wanted something different, which then kind of fast forward to this year, I kind of created an image around an iconic image, the Sony Melmal image painted by Sobha Singh. And that was an idea in my head from 8-9 years ago. But I'm glad I didn't do it 8-9 years ago, because the knowledge and the expertise and the camera systems and everything else, that, and even Photoshop and you know, playing around with the images in post-production, it wasn't up to the standard that it is now. So I'm glad I did it now, where technology is a little bit different, where I'm able to create an image which is, dare I say, almost very identical to the actual painting.
Wow.
But I'm pushing the boundaries as much as I can.
And that's reflected in the awards. And so how much importance do you place upon those WPPI awards and things that you seem to just gather like other people gather another mug in the cupboards? How many have you got lined up on your...
I'd, to be honest, they're not even on display anymore, Andy. They're in a... I hate to say this, but they're in a bag in the loft. I've got a little one running around at home. They're made of glass, sharp edges. So it's just like, so I don't display them anymore. Can't remember. I think I was at a competition a little while back, and there was another photographer who came up and congratulated, you know, as you do, on winning the category. And she was that taken back by it, saying, oh, I want a trophy at one point or something that I can share to everybody. But the reality was I kind of questioned the photographer in that case, and I said, will winning a trophy get you more clients?
Mm.
And she was like, I don't know. I went, well, if winning a trophy will get you more clients and displaying a trophy will get you more clients, feel free to take this one. I said, I have no place for it. I don't show it off in a display cabinet. I mean, I probably will at some point, but it's not the end all or be all. I enter competitions because it allows me to push myself creatively each year to see how much I'll measure, not with photographers in the UK, to see how we're out, yeah, worldwide, to see, you know, these amazing photographers in Malaysia, in USA, Italy, all around Europe. You know, these are photographers who are on a world-class level that you're comparing yourself with.
And do you take any inspiration from those world-class photographers?
All day, every day. Amazing photographers, but, you know, amazing human beings as well at the same time. So you'd see somebody who's got umpteen awards, like Jerry Guionis, where he's like a grand master of WPPI or double grand master, I think, now. And then you got the Johnson Wees and these Malaysian photographers. And you know, at one point you look up to these people as inspirations. I still do. But, you know, I'm actually good friends with these people now. But, you know, you would think there'll be an element of ego behind these people. But you can sit down and have a normal conversation with them and have a laugh and a joke. And that's what I like about it the most.
Do you find yourself pinching yourself a little bit sometimes thinking, you know?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes.
That's probably pretty amazing. You were talking about you mentoring up-and-coming photographers and offering courses and stuff. Were you mentored yourself at any point?
I was not mentored exactly in the point in the context where I've actually had a photographer that was with me for, you know, 6 months to a year. When I first started photography, I was like anybody else, seeking inspiration with anything: magazines, posters, billboards, music videos, films, movies, theatre. You know, looking at museums, looking at architectural paintings, and everything else like that. And then I saw for an education workshop with a photographer, world-class photographer called Jerry Guionis, based in Australia. Well, he's in the USA now, but at that time he was in Australia. So it was a 5-day intense workshop with this guy. And then from then onwards, I kind of saw workshops or educational in different areas that I could either help improve my business, workflow, editing style, refining my work just a little bit, that little bit further. But I think all in all, maybe 3 or 4 workshops from photographers that I didn't want to imitate. There was just an element of their work that I
just
kind of...
a bit of inspiration.
Inspiration, like Jerry Guionis was all about posing and understanding light. And then you got photographers like Kedah Zee and Johnson Wee, who are all about post-production and editing and how to maximize that with, you know, your raw files. So, you know, there's a small little elements from each of the photographer that I've taken.
Is this what you've always wanted to do, though? Were you always... was your ambition always to be a wedding photographer or a commercial photographer, or did you want to be a DJ, or you know what I mean? Where did that start?
The ambition was never to be a photographer. I think the ambition was always to be an artist. All children are born artists, so all adults are artists. It's just at some point in our time we stop creating and we start being children. And I think being a child, you know, I was a bit naughty and a little bit mischievous as a little kid, and painting and drawing was one of the few things that kept me at home. That carried on until I was probably about university. I didn't study art at uni. I wish I did if I was to turn back the clock. I studied accountancy and finance, so I do my own accounts at the moment. So it has its benefits. Yeah. But the painting and drawing was always there. Then it was moving over to graphic design, and there's always that hunger to carry on painting and drawing. So when I picked up a camera and started taking pictures, and realized that there was an element of art still involved, where I was still painting and drawing in post-production using, you know, softwares like Photoshop and Lightroom, the artist in me came back to surface. Okay. So it's just like, okay, I think I want to pursue photography more, because it feeds that little hunger that I have of creating art.
So can you remember your very first wedding?
Yeah, that wasn't intentional either. So I never wanted to become a wedding photographer, Andy. So I had a camera and I was shooting commercial work, like product photography, cars, vehicles, and venues. And my sister's best friend said, can you photograph my wedding? Because you take beautiful pictures of your nieces and nephews. I'm like, I take pictures of my family. I'm not a wedding photographer and I don't want to be a wedding photographer. I said, she begged and pleaded. So I told her, I said, look, book your photographer that you want as a professional, and I'll just be the fly on the wall, the photojournalist, sort of thing. And I still have a few of those images on my website, and that was about 14, 15 years ago or something like that. And that's when I photographed that first wedding with, you know, one lens, one body, no flash, didn't know what I was doing. And I just literally physically caught the bug, because it was just being able to capture a small little moment and immortalizing it. It was just, yeah. There's a feeling, it's difficult to describe that feeling, just to look back at that one image that described 5 minutes of a whole scene. And then that's when I kind of knew there and then, this is what I want to pursue.
So how did you take that forward from that point? Did you then just start advertising? How did you go about it?
I threw myself like feet in first. I started getting a portfolio ready, started doing shoots, freelancing with models, makeup artists, you name it. Pre-wed shoots, any friends and family that were getting married, hey, I'll do the pre-shoot and let me learn on the job. I'll understand lighting and posing. I was very fortunate enough to find a mentor or like a workshop at the very beginning of my career to not make any mistakes going forward. And then the images and what I was creating at that time, 12, 13 years ago, it was slightly out of the norm from what everybody else was doing. And just like a snowball, it just kind of
fantastic.
It just grew and grew into something, you know, fast forward and here I am talking to you.
The pinnacle of your career.
Pinnacle of my career.
I was talking to Amar about couples who may not be totally engaged in the process, or you find a bride that's very engaged with the process and a groom who perhaps isn't so much, and how you deal with that situation where somebody perhaps is horribly camera, like myself, I'm horribly camera shy. That's, again, similar to yourself. That's why I want to be behind the camera and not in front of it. So how do you go about dealing with those types of couples?
I mean, I'll use you as an example. I photographed you several times.
Yeah, you have.
At weddings, and you're saying you feel awkward in front of the camera, but I've always given you the images back and they look phenomenal, in my opinion. It's the same with clients. It's just making them feel comfortable, engage with them, finding mutual ground, common areas that you can talk about, and then just keeping them up to date with there's an element of customer service in what we do as well. We're not just wedding photographers or, you know, wedding suppliers. As a wedding photographer, I'm not knocking any other supplier back, like caterers or DJs or decor companies. But out of all the other suppliers, unless it's a wedding planner, we're generally there from the very beginning of the day all the way to the very end. So the relationship that we have with our clients, in my opinion, is a very intimate one. So being able to get on with your clients,
because you're actually going into their house apart from
exactly
else. Yeah,
well, you know, we're there that, you know, from the moment the bride or the groom are getting ready in the morning all the way till the reception, until the bride says farewell to her family and gets emotional and tearful, we're there and we're witnessing that. So if we're able to have a better relationship and connection with our clients, the closer we're able to get to the scene without disturbing the scene, and keeping it as real as possible. So the relationship that we have is, I think it's an important one. So it's just building up that relationship, to be honest. It's conversing with your clients, creating WhatsApp groups. And, you know, at one point we're wedding photographers, next minute we're wedding planners and event organizers and product photographers and everything else in between.
And do you think couples have any expectation of that when they first consult you or first come to you? Do you think they have any concept of where that process is going to go?
No, I'm just this week alone, I've had a few clients say, all right, we're starting, it's a Sikh wedding, you need to start at 9 a.m. And I'm like, that's a little bit late. I'm like, you're getting ready at 9? No, we'll see you at the temple. I'm like, hey, like, let's rewind. Are you getting ready at home? Yeah, so it's conversing with the clients and setting their expectations. Sometimes, in a lot of cases, sometimes, you know, there hasn't been a wedding in the family for the past 10, 15 years, and they don't know anything. Times have changed 15 years ago, so you have to, you know, bring your clients up to speed of what's actually expected of them, and us, as a job for us to create these images and these moments for them.
Sure, okay. And where would you say, what's the shoot that you're ultimately most proud of? Would it be that King and Queen image that you were talking about, or...?
There's always something. I think there's that King, and the last two images that I can think of visually are probably the King and Queen and the Sony Melwell. The Sony Melwell actually went to competition about a month ago, and it bombed in competition. I think it's got like 83 or 84, which is a reasonable score to achieve a merit, but it's not award top three. But bear in mind, you know, you have an image up in front of five judges, and on this occasion all five judges were English wedding photographers and portrait photographers. So they'll see the image, but they don't understand the story behind the image. So they're looking at the image, they're only going to judge what's in front of them and not understand the story.
So they're judging it cold rather than,
You know, hopefully, you're just hoping that, you know, one judge gets tearful or sees something and creates a visual story to persuade the other judges to score the image higher. But I have different images. I think one of the images that scored first place this year, it's a lovely image, is by far from being one of my favourites, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just, you know, sometimes you create images just for that visual impact to shock the judges, to say, oh my God, this is, wow, how has this photographer created this image? But there's a creative element that comes to it, but it's just not, it's not my favourite still. I have images that are more emotional, I'm more emotionally attached to, but that scored like 75s and 77s at competition. Okay. So I don't really, that's why I'm like, and the competition that, element is.
So that emotion, because you were there, you shot it, you set it up, you inspired it, that's where your head's at, but the judges have no concept of any of that.
That's it.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. So when was the first time then that you sort of, I think you've probably already answered this in a way, but the first time when you maybe got home and got image on your screen and thought, bam, I've arrived. This is it. This is the big time.
This is the final destination. Oh God, you're putting me on the spot, mate. I think it was from that very first wedding. I'm actually going back and I can't think of anything that actually stands out a little bit more. It was from that very first wedding that I had no experience of photographing a wedding. And the bride was leaving home. This is my sister's best friend. She's leaving home. Her husband's in front of her. She's, you know, crying. Her eyes are now bloodshot red. There's one or two teardrops coming out of the right eye. The height difference between her and her husband. So her husband's shoulder is just literally above her nose line. So the videographer in that question is, you know, traditional videographer. Let's read between the lines. He had one of these security light things on his camera. It's like big tungsten light. So what? Because he was lighting up the groom. Because the height difference between the groom and the bride, the shoulder put a shadow on the bride's face from nose down. And the only bit that was lit was literally her eyes as she's walking behind him, leaving out. So she's holding the pallah. He's in front. You just see the shoulder of him. And all you see is her eyes illuminated. But in that, in her eyes, it's just bloodshot tears. Bloodshot eyes and tears coming down. And then I was literally at the side angle photographing the side on. And as soon as I took it, I knew what I took before even seeing the back of the image, the back of the camera. The moment I looked at the back of the camera, I was just like, oh, wow. And that was it. That's when I caught the bug.
Is that the sort of image that you could blow up to, you know, uber mega size and display it on a wall somewhere and just think?
I would. There's so many people that will have a story behind that image, like, why is she crying? I mean, if you're from a Sikh background, you know exactly what that image is about.
Yeah. So here we are in, and I was, again, referring back to Amar and Karisha, post-COVID. How did COVID affect what you do?
I think it had a positive effect on me, to be honest, mentally as well. I think it got to a point where I think we all needed that little break from work. Different people see it in a different way. They were hit financially and struggling, but you know, I wasn't in that position to struggle, where, you know, I'd kind of made the sound investments and everything else without boring you too much about that. But is that part where I, you know, we've just had a little baby boy, and all of a sudden now it's COVID, and it's just like, it was a blessing in disguise for me. Yeah. It's just like, I now get to watch him growing up as a baby.
Which you wouldn't have done if,
And being away Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then coming back, being tired on a Monday to play with your son, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, relax, and then when Thursday, Friday, go back off of it. So it's a blessing in disguise for me. The whole industry was hit hard, so, you know, like, without playing the same tune that everybody else is talking about and what was said, you know, I kind of see the positive in different things.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, actually, and it's nice for you that that you had that father son time, which, you know, a lot of people completely missed out on.
It actually makes it difficult to get back to work. So when COVID was officially kind of lifted, and then everybody of the wedding season was going back to work, and then next year it was just full steam ahead. It was just like, oh.
Do you ever get that sort of feel? And if you do, how do you get out of it? That sort of jaded feeling, you know, do you ever sort of step out of your front door in the morning and think, oh, no, Or do you step out of your door and think, yes?
90% it's a yes. The 10% it's a no, is because due to lack of sleep. So no, okay. Like as everybody else, like if you've been chugging the night before till about, you know, 11 at night, and then you got home, backed up, and then gone to sleep, and you're working again another 16-hour shift on 3-4 hours sleep, you have that element of you want to stay in bed. But I'll be honest with you, I see it as a blessing. I make a living, I make an income of something that I actually chose to do, as opposed to a job that's 9 to 5 and it's Groundhog Day, and you know I'm blessed. I get to go to work, and even though there's other suppliers there, they don't you know, our wedding industry, we talk about it that we're not really wedding suppliers. We're all wedding friends. We look at the videographers as friends. Hey, we get to hang out with. So it's like I get to, you know, Amar from Make It Real. It's just I want to go to work with him. It's not like, hey, I'm a working and photographing bride. It's just like, hey, I got one of my best mates here, and we're having a laugh and a joke, and we're getting paid for it.
Yeah, true enough. And how about destination weddings? How do they fit into life these days?
Oh, destination weddings. I've loved shooting destination weddings. They throw me out of my comfort zone. There's a lot of planning. There's a lot of headache and rushing around. There's an element of stress, which I do actually gravitate towards. I do enjoy it. But it's at that point now where, you know, going back to work life and social life, if I've got to go shoot a wedding you know, shooting a wedding on a Saturday means that I can't shoot the wedding on Sunday, or potentially even shoot a wedding on Friday. It's just like I have to price up the wedding for 3 days. And if I don't get priced up for 3 days, I was better off staying at home. That means I could shoot 3 weddings that weekend, and the following weekend, I can take the whole weekend off and spend it on.
And would you ever take a wedding and charge less for it for your own self-satisfaction?
No.
Okay.
Long story short. And maybe if you was to ask me, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, hey, there's a wedding in Thailand and Bali, and we'll pay for your flights and a hotel, would you shoot it? Yeah, I'll do it for next to nothing. You know, you're young, you've got no responsibilities, you're not married, you're single. Hey, why not? Right? But when you get to a certain point, you know, everybody changes in, you know, where they are in their life point. You know, I'm married, I've got a little boy. It's just, for me, it doesn't make any sense for me to go that way. Even if I'm going to get something beautiful out of it, I understand there's a level of experience. Yeah. So in most cases, I end up getting priced out of the question by inexperienced photographers who just want to do it for portfolio. We've all been there, you know, when we've all started out, we do things a little bit cheap because it's like, oh my God, you're getting married at this venue and this location abroad. Yeah, I'll do it for next to nothing. It's going to be good for my portfolio. But the reality is all the other clients are going to precede that. You're going to want it for the same price. So you're doing it for a portfolio, but you're never going to end up charging what you actually eventually want to charge for that wedding.
And have you ever had, you know, celebrities wanting you to shoot for exposure? There's a dodgy phrase. I'm not going to ask you to name the celeb, but, you know, do you get those kind of requests?
I get those requests. Influencers or people who've got a huge social media following and everybody else, or people who from a wealthy background, but it doesn't faze me, like celebrity status. I don't kind of usher, unless it's somebody from my, you know, childhood hero. I'm not going to get all, oh my God, it's blah, 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 and let's do it for next to nothing.
Because people are just people at the end of the day, no matter what, really.
Yeah, I mean, there's that whole, hey, I'm a celebrity photographer and whatnot that comes behind it. But if you're a true celebrity photographer, a lot of these photographers don't even want you to release these images. They're actually exclusively held by Hello Magazine or a different article. So you're not even allowed to actually, they change your copyright in your contract. I've never been taken by it. I will never discount somebody who's a social media or an influencer. For me, whether you change a tire in winter or summer, the price is still going to be the same.
That's good. I like that. That phrase. That's good. Shall I ask you the final question, which is, so I can wave the magic wand and give you the tools and the capacity and the talent to do any other job in the business, what would you do?
I'd still do what I do.
You'd still?
If you gave me the one magic wand, I'd use it to go back further into time. So I went to university and I studied accountancy and finance, you know, at the age of 19, 20. I wish I went back and carried on and studied fine art and history, meaning I would have been a photographer 10 years earlier.
Sooner,
I mean, you know, I've been in this working as a wedding photographer for what, just shy of 13, 14 years now. And 13, 14 years, you know, I like to think I've accomplished a lot. You know, I'm working with several brands, Nikon being one of them, and I dare I say I'm one of the only Asian or Indian photographers in the UK or Europe that are working with Nikon, and some other brands in the US and lighting companies and album companies, and that's what I've achieved in 12 years.
And that association has come hard fought, I would imagine.
It's hard fought, but it's nice to be recognised as well.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
It opens up, hopefully, you know, working with brands and associations like this, it opens up the door and opportunities for, you know, the rest of our industry. There's an abundance of talent in our industry, especially with wedding photographers and videographers. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, just been working with some brands like this, it opens up that, you know, avenue for everybody else to come through.
Because I think, I was saying to Emma that I think COVID knocked a lot of the chances, shall we say, out of the business. You know, the fly-by-nights that were charging next to nothing to do the jobs. I think they suddenly realised that this probably wasn't the industry for them, and off they went. But where would you see yourself in 10 years' time?
Hopefully still shooting weddings, as long as no clients call me uncle. I think I've always jokingly said it. I mean, the moment a bride or a groom call me uncle, I think I'm officially
done. You're out the door.
I'm just done. I'm going to be that photographer that shows up with dyed hair. A dyed beard. But I think maybe I probably have maybe 10 or 15 years left within the wedding photography industry. Nothing to do, I think, with age. I think it's just the different level of creativity that comes through with the next generation of young photographers. It's going to get to a point where, you know, I'm a dinosaur compared to them and what they're doing. So it's either keep pushing this is why I keep pushing myself and, you know, going into competitions to keep the energy and the creativity alive and staying a step ahead. But if I'm not shooting weddings, I'll still be in the photography industry.
Well, Govia, thank you very, very much for taking part. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Cheers, man. So there we go. Hopefully you didn't spot the joins. Like I say, nearly a whole minute, I think, taken out in the edit of me waffling. So yeah, I've learnt my lesson, and higher production values coming soon, he said confidently. Again, if you're an industry professional, you want to take part, then please do get in touch. Andy at jibztv.com, jibztv.com. Hopefully by now we're going out on Spotify, iTunes, and all the sort of major platforms. And so hopefully the audience will grow and grow. I really hope so. And thank you for sticking with it for this long. Next episode, episode 4, with Kunal from MK Roadshow, DJ MK. He was in touch and popped around, already done the recording. Really nice guy, and an interesting chat. So that'll be dropping next week. Thank you for sticking with it. See you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.